Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and
Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today.
Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Outscored the Knicks 23-3 in the fourth quarter.
Boom baby in the country, boom baby downtown. Boomers on the sideline with Coach Larry Brown. Boom baby, that's our cheer. Sing it real loud, let everybody hear. Boom baby, get on your feet. Boom baby, faces can't be beat. Boom baby, sing it real loud. Boom baby, we are Pacers proud.
Unreal.
Boy, they're going to remember this in Indiana for years.
This fourth quarter has been unbelievable.
Hello, this is Joe Milligan, and this is the Coach K Show, and I'm joined, as always, by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schultheis. Coach, can you tell the excitement I have that we're going to be interviewing one of my favorite sports personalities of all time?
I'll tell you what, Joe, that was an awesome introduction to the show. Of course, Bobby Slick Leonard will be joining the Coach K and Joe Show later in this first hour. We are excited to have him, and for our listeners who grew up and with Slick, maybe even the generation that was with him when he went through Indiana University and won a national championship with under Coach Branch McCracken, his time with the ABA Pacers, 3 ABA championships, 5 final appearances. It was awesome. He helped usher the Pacers into the NBA, and of course, he's been an announcer, I believe, with the Pacers for the last 29 years. And folks, it's more than just his coaching. It's more than just his announcing. Boom, baby, as you know. He's got a new book out called Boom, Baby, My Basketball Life in Indiana. And I've been able to preview some of the reading on it with Kindle and Amazon. And folks, if you just want a wonderful read where it just pulls you in, you got to get that book, and I'll talk a little bit about that with Slick when he comes on. Of course, we'll have Jerry Palm later on in the show as well. CBS Bracketology, if you have not been, Google Jerry Palm, go to his site, and he has put out his initial brackets for this coming NCAA tournament. He updates them throughout the week. You can see who he has in, who he has out, who he has on the bubble, those types of things. It's very worth your time, and we'll have him on the show a little bit later. But so much to talk about, Joe. You know, IU has a great win over Wisconsin. The questionable storming of the court after beating Whiskey or Wisconsin, I don't put them up as a program that IU is below and trying to reach above. I don't think storming of the court was necessary. We posted that on Facebook. We got some interesting responses. We'll talk about them as well. The municipal golf course, if you're local, of course, I'm in Evansville and Joe is out of Jasper, and we cover southern Indiana as well as the state, the tri-state, and national as well. But the municipal golf course in Jasper, Indiana, was renamed to Buffalo Trace. I'm sure there'll be cardboard cutouts, probably wood cutouts of Buffalo telling you what hole to go to. The trampoline herd of Buffalo at the Buffalo Trace Municipal Golf Course, which we can still call the Muni as most of us know it and enjoy it. A number of things to talk about. Like I said, the Hoosiers are making a move. That was a huge signature win for the Hoosiers. The Aces struggling a little bit. They had a nice win the other night at Southern Illinois, but stubbed their toe at Illinois State in three overtimes. A lot of great basketball, a lot of great high school basketball. Of course, this weekend marks the continued rivalry between Bar Eve, who was number one in 1A. I don't know. They got beat in the Kentucky-Indiana Challenge the other day on Saturday by a very good Elizabethtown Kentucky team. In no way should it have affected their ranking, but we'll have to see. But they'll play. They'll renew their rivalry with Lagodi this weekend, Saturday at Lagodi. Of course, Jasper had a really nice win against Vincennes. And, Joe, I might mention before I take a breath here, as some people probably want me to, I did say that Jasper would get that Vincennes victory. And I did say, and I posted it well before the game, upset special, Indiana over Wisconsin by five. It wasn't by five, but a lot of people asked me, why did I pick IU before the game when I picked them, and why did I pick them after the victory? And I'll tell you why real quickly. Wisconsin was undefeated. It's hard to go 15, 16, 17, 18. It's just hard to do that, especially in conference play. They were on the road. They were up against an athletic team. Wisconsin is a really good basketball team. They're not extremely athletic. They are a very, very good basketball team. And as I said, they're on the road. They're up against an athletic team. They're up against a team that Wisconsin has beaten IU a number of times for several years. I don't know, six years in a row, something like that. I'm not even sure what the number was. IU wasn't playing extremely well against the stronger teams, which played into the psychology of Wisconsin, maybe taking them for granted. And honestly, when the game started, you could tell after the first 3 or 4 minutes, even though that Dockage guy and the announcer on ESPN was trying to make Wisconsin all world, you could see they were a half step slow. They weren't getting where they needed to be defensively. They weren't moving the ball offensively. When they did, good things happened, but they didn't do it enough. And I just felt like this would be a game, if IU's ready to play and I knew they would be at home, I thought their athleticism and just a hiccup for Wisconsin on the road, this was the upset special. This was the game. It could happen. And it did. And, folks, that doesn't take away against from Wisconsin. And that doesn't mean IU will beat them when they play them again, if they play them again. I'm not sure how the schedule works out in the Big Ten. I haven't looked. But what it does mean is IU got a very important signature win, a very important signature win. So to Chris Brothers and a few of the other guys that commented on Facebook, and Chris, if you're listening, we appreciate your support of the show, whether you're happy or unhappy with our comments. We shouldn't have rushed the court. It's not necessary. That wasn't signature program win. It was a signature win in this season as we attempt to get an NCAA bid.
Well, I'll tell you what, the one thing you neglected, and typical IU bias, you did not mention the Boilermakers win at Illinois, something that IU could not accomplish this year.
And it was a good win, Joe. And it wasn't that I was snubbing the Boilers on that. Of course, they beat Illinois 66-58, but Illinois also lost to Northwestern. And
on a down
course, Northwestern has a good young coach. We'll talk a little bit more about Northwestern later in the year.
Now, I got one quick question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Did you honestly think at this point of the season, you know, it's only four or five games in, the Boilermakers and the Hoosiers are both in the standings above the Ohio State Buckeyes?
Well, I'm not going to say that I would have expected it, but I will say that if you go back to earlier shows, I have been clear on my thoughts on Ohio State. I do not think the Big Ten is as good as the rankings say they are. I don't know if they're worse than any other conference, but I don't think they're as dominant as we kind of make them out to be. I do think that Ohio State is undersized, and I said that all year. And if they do not shoot well, you know, a lot of people say, well, this is a Final Four team. Clark Kellogg said these are final Sweet 16 teams. I do think that Ohio State is possibly a Sweet 16 team. But I think that they are going to have to be on their game every single night out, regardless of who they play in the conference, because they're undersized. And when you're undersized in the Big Ten, it gets tough because the Big Ten's very physical. So you better shoot well. I don't believe they have a deep bench. I thought it was pretty interesting. If you listened to last week's show, and if you haven't, go to our podcast at thecoachkandjoeshow.com. You can pick up the podcast of last week's show when we had Dane Fife, assistant at Michigan State, on. And he talked about the Michigan State preparation for that game, and he said they didn't make adjustments in the game as well as they should have, and that's why Ohio State could make the run they made. And Ohio State has lost three in a row. Of course, they could have won those games as well, but they didn't. And again, I think it comes down to Ohio State is a little bit undersized. Wisconsin lacks some athletic ability that when they're not moving their feet, when they're not getting in position, it gets a little tougher for them when they make mistakes and they're out of position. IU showed that. Yogi Ferrell's penetration to the basket, Robinson's penetration to the basket. I mean, there were times when Will Sheehy looked like one of the quickest guys on the floor. And that's what I said about Wisconsin a week or two ago. I said, Wisconsin looks like one of the best teams in the country for 6 or 7 weeks. And then all of a sudden, a week later, 2 weeks later, they struggle and they say, you say, my gosh, how's this team going to be a top 20 team? And it's interesting, they come to IU, and folks, they don't play like a top 20 team. IU looks like a top 20 team. But that's the way basketball goes. You know, our guest coming up a little bit later is Slick Leonard, and he says it best when you listen to him talk about the game of basketball. He says, you know, a team effort, it is legitimately a team effort. Everybody responsibility out on the floor. When everybody's doing what they're supposed to do, IU becomes 10 points better. And you may say, you mean scoring 10 points more? No. 10 points better. 5 points more basket offense-wise, 5 points better defensive-wise. You know, when somebody says they're 10 points better, it doesn't mean that they're going to score 10 more points. It might be 5 more points that they score. It might be 5 more points you eliminate. And I know when I was coaching and when I still work with young people, that's one thing we talk about. You're not always going to score baskets on the offensive end. You're going to score points or be positive on the point side by playing good defense. So I thought both those things happened for IU the other night. I'm taking nothing away from their victory. I thought it was a great victory. I think it's a signature win for the Hoosiers and Tom Crean. But I do not think you need to rush the court. I understand they're young people. They're having fun. I get it. I understand it. And there's time for that in high school, in grade school. But maybe they just want to get on the camera. Get a fat head and hold it up. Get one of Joe or Coach K and hold it up. But, you know, they're having fun. I understand that, folks. So if you weren't happy with my comments that I don't think IU needed to rush the court, I think it was more for me a program statement. I don't think rushing the court on a victory over Wisconsin is a signature win for the program. I think it was a signature win for the season because the Hoosiers need that as they get into the NCAA tournament. You know, we've got a great guest coming up, and he is one of my I grew up watching Slick Leonard coach. I grew up listening to him on the radio. Now I'm older. I'm still growing up, though, as many of you say to me at different times with comments. But he's coming up next on the show. We're going to talk about his new book, Boom Baby. But everything we talk about with Coach Leonard is going to be what's in that book. And it is a great read. I got to read parts of it already. It's just down to earth. It's what Bobby Leonard is and what his wife is. And I'm going to love talking about basketball, coaching, the Pacers. Got a couple questions from listeners. If you have a question or a comment for Bobby Slick Leonard or one of us, you can call the show at 773-897-6325, or you can text me direct, Ken Schulteis, Coach K, at 812-480-9449. Folks, stay tuned. Start tweeting to your buddies to join the show, CoachKandJoeShow.com. We got Coach Bobby Slick Leonard. He is truly a legend in Indiana. He's a treasure in Indiana. We're going to talk to him. We're going to have some fun. After this break, we're coming back on the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Have you ever heard a car ad that looks too good to be true or has fast-talking fine print?
Buy before midnight tonight. Maybe okay, maybe not. You probably aren't eligible for this event. Ubelar's prices are better, but you can't know that.
You want to hear Ubelar's fine print? That's right, silence. Our prices will save you money, huge inventory, even bigger discounts. Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're excited to be back. Our first guest on our first hour segment, he's a treasure in Indiana. And, Coach, I'm not patronizing you here. I really feel that way. I grew up watching you when I was living in Jasper, Indiana. My dad was a high school basketball coach, Ed Schulteis. I met you when you came down to the high school. I can't remember if you were working with the Pacers in the camps or you were working on some sporting goods things, but you were at the high school. My dad was athletic director at the time, and I was a high school kid running around in there, and I got to meet you. Coach Bobby Slick Leonard, welcome to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Okay, Joe. Thank you very much. Thank you. You know, I'm a big, I've always been, I like Jasper, Indiana. And I go down there. I go through Jasper. I made a speech down there several years back. But I go through Jasper because I go down every spring and spend about 3 or 4 days with one of my old players, Don Boosie, over at Holland. And so I go through Jasper and hit Huntingburg, and he lives out there on Old 64.
Don Boosie, the boo-boo, a tremendous defensive player. And let's start right there, Coach. Let's start with Don Boosie because he resonates in the southern part of the state quite a bit. This is Ken Schulteis, Coach K. When I was coaching at Jasper High School, Don Boosie was an assistant coach for the Southridge Raiders, which was a big rivalry. And you, as good as he was as an ABA and MBA player and at the University of Evansville, you could tell that he had such a hand in helping those Southridge teams as an assistant coach develop their game as well. What kind of a player, a mentality did Don Boosie bring to your teams?
Well, he was a great player. He was a great player. I used to put him on the toughest guy. Like if we were playing the Chicago Bulls, I'd put him on Michael Jordan. He always took the tough guy defensively. He really understood the game. He really, Boo really understood the game. And, you know, he was a great guy. He finally, when he came in, when I first got him, he wasn't a threat from three. But by the time he left, they had to guard him out there in that three-point area because he could hit you know, he was dangerous out there. But I can't say enough good things about Boo Boo. He was a special guy, and he's still special to me today.
You know, Coach, I'm giggling a little bit because I'm just happy to have you on the show, and I know it's you probably get that from a lot of people. I call you a treasure to the state of Indiana and to hoops. You know, 60 years of your life you've spent in basketball, I mean, really involved in basketball. Your family is a basketball family. Your wife was right there by your side, your wife Nancy. I'm going to make this statement, and then maybe we can just talk briefly about it. You know, Indianapolis has become a sports mecca, professionally and collegiately, and great high school sports as well. Indiana, always known as a basketball state, but now kind of that centerpiece. And I know I was reading in your book, Boom Baby, My Basketball Life in Indiana, you were talking about growing up in Terre Haute, and you're talking about Highway 40 and how it was kind of the center of the Midwest. Everybody passed through Terre Haute. But you go on and you establish yourself with the Pacers and Indianapolis. I'm going to make this comment and just get some comments about that time. You and your wife go on WTTV, and you have the Pacer Telethon, and it's basically to save the Indiana Pacers, make sure they stay in Indianapolis. I'm going to say this, July 3rd, somewhere 1977, I believe it was, we're ushering into the NBA. I think that Indianapolis, I know Bill Hudnut and his group did tremendous things, and I'm sure you were a part of that. I think that that is a significant moment in the history of Indianapolis in Indiana sports. Without that telethon, without you and your family humbling itself, TTV making that effort, going on and saying, you know what, we're going to do whatever we can to save these Pacers. We'll have a telethon to go out there. I was a little guy watching in Jasper, Indiana. I sent some money in, $5 I think it was. I think it was significant to where Indianapolis is today as a sports mecca, that you were able to do that, willing to do that, and you kept the Pacers in Indianapolis.
Well, Joe, it would have been a shame. It would have been a shame if we'd lost the franchise. You know, when I first started with the Pacers back in 67, Indianapolis was a little run down. It was old. It was a little run down. And the Pacers kind of revitalized Indianapolis, and you know, we went from the Fairgrounds Coliseum and built Market Square Arena, and then of course we got the Colts. And had we lost that franchise, I don't know if the Colts would be here today. I don't know. So it was a very important time in the history of the Pacers, and fortunately, we got them. We still got them, and they're playing great. We beat the New York Knicks last night, and we're 20-1 at home. So we're having a good year.
Yeah, and we're going to get to the Pacers in just a few minutes. I do want to mention a few other things, just the amazing life that you have had, and if you're like myself, you just – look back at what your life has been and how basketball has been such an important part of it. I know growing up for me, my dad was a high school coach. I grew up around it. I became a coach on the high school level. I've met some great people because of it. I've got to go some places. I've had some tremendous highs in my life and some tremendous lows. But, Coach, I got to believe when you look back, it's probably amazing and such a blessing that a round ball bouncing in the streets and blacktop and concrete and rock and cinder block of Terre Haute, Indiana, has given you the life that you've had for these last 60 years.
Well, I go back to high school, Terre Haute Gerstmeyer. It's now Terre Haute North. They consolidated over, like they did everywhere. But I had a great high school basketball coach by the name of Howard Sharp, and he is still second or third in the most wins in the history of the state of Indiana. But anyway, he was a protege of Glenn Curtis, and Glenn Curtis coached Johnny Wooden at Martinsville High School. So I had the fundamental background. Had it not been for basketball, I'd never gotten out of Terre Haute. There's no question about that. I grew up Depression and World War II, and had it not been for basketball, I'd probably been at a factory somewhere. But Branch McCracken down at IU, he saw something good in me, and the years we spent at Indiana University were great years. They were great years. Back then, you couldn't play as a freshman, but and you had to win the Big Ten championship to get into the NCAA tournament. So our sophomore year, we finished, I don't know, third or something like that in the Big Ten. But the next year, we won it all. We won the Big Ten championship. We won the national championship. And then my senior year, we won the Big Ten again. But, you know, I've been down around that Assembly Hall, and when I see that 1953 flag hanging up there, it kind of brings back a lot of memories. And we had some kids from Southern Indiana on that 1953 championship team. We had Dick Farley from over at Winslow, Indiana. We had Burke Scott. He was from Tell City. We had Phil Byers, who played high school ball at Evansville Wrights. So we had a Southern Indiana flavor there. So that was really, you know, as I look back, and I tell kids this today, when you look back years down the road, you will say, those 4 years I spent at Indiana University were four of the greatest years of my life. That's where I met my wife. We've almost been married 60 years. That was really fun because you won.
You know, IU's a great place. I graduated from Indiana University. The names that you just mentioned are all people that I'm familiar with from growing up and my dad being from Evansville originally and then coaching in the area for years and years. You know, Coach, when you look at your life coming out of Terre Haute, you go to IU, you win a national championship in 53. Was the 53 team the best team, or was one of the other teams in there as good or better and just didn't win a national championship?
Well, we should have won it back-to-back. We should have won it back-to-back. That's one of the big disappointments in my basketball life, because we won it in 53. We started with three juniors and two sophomores. So we had everybody back, plus we had the bench, and we had a strong bench. Had everybody back. We won the Big Ten championship, and we were rated number one in the country the whole year, and Notre Dame upset us in the NCAA regional, and that was on a controversial call, I might add. But the 1954 team, we should have won it again.
Well, then you go on and you join the professional basketball, and again, I mean, talk about just a guy who's, if you want to put the word winner next to you, and I know you're pretty humble about that, just a down-to-earth guy, everything you've got involved in, you are associated with success, and you are associated with what I call successful people around you, great players, playing on the pro level, the Minneapolis Lakers. Talk to us about just a few of the guys you played with. They're big names. If you love pro basketball or just love basketball in general, we'll recognize a few of those names. Tell us a little bit about your time on the pro level playing.
Well, I got out of IU, and back in those days, you had to spend a couple of years in the military. which I did. I spent a couple of years in the military, and then when I got out, I got out in September of 1956, and the camp with the Minneapolis Lakers training camp was opening about 2 weeks later. So I went right from being in the Army to training camp with the Lakers, and that was an experience. That was an experience. Those years I spent in Minneapolis, snowed all the time, cold. And so when they said, well, we're going to move the franchise to Los Angeles, become the Los Angeles Lakers, everybody on the ball club was tickled to death. But we went to the World Championship Series in 1959 and got beat by the Boston Celtics with Bill Russell and Cousy and Tommy Heinsohn, and that ball club they had just, you know, dominated. They dominated the NBA. And when we moved to Los Angeles in 1960, then I was on a ball club there. We had a good ball club with the Lakers first time out in Los Angeles. We had Elgin Baylor, and Jerry West was a rookie. And when it started out there, the fans in Southern California weren't used to, you know, they didn't know nothing about pro basketball. And they had a counter where it counted the number of people coming in to the arena, and so when they played the national anthem, you could look up there and the flag, the American flag was blowing, and you could see how many people were coming in the place. And when we first started out, like in the first November, there were probably about 3,500, 4,000. By the time we got to the playoffs, that place was packed. It was packed. And that was the start of the Los Angeles Lakers in Southern California.
Well, you move on and you go in from the pros, and you played with guys like Elgin Baylor, Hot Rod Hundley, you played with George Mikan?
No, George is a guy, though, that gave me the nickname of Slick. And it happened, you mentioned Hot Rod Hundley. We drafted Hot Rod Hundley. Now, when I say Hot Rod Hundley, he was the first of three All-American guards that came out of West Virginia. He was the first one. Jerry West was the second one. And Rod Thorne, who's president of basketball operations in the NBA today, he was the third one. And so I was associated with all of them. But we decided, Hot Rod was such a big name in West Virginia at the time, so we said, well, we're going to take a couple of exhibition games in there early in the fall. So we played at Morgantown, where the University of West Virginia is, and then got on a bus, and we're going to play the next night about 130, 40, 50 miles away. And got on that bus, and the guys went to sleep. And we're about halfway there, and there was a sign on the side of the road that said, truck stop 5 miles. So I was sitting with George Mikan, and he was coaching the ball club at the time. And everybody was asleep, but George and I were sitting up in a front seat with the peep lights on in a bus, playing Hollywood Gin. And, yeah, everybody else was asleep. And George says to me, he said, Bobby, he said, you think we ought to stop at truck stop and let the guys get a cup of coffee sandwich? I said, sure. So we pulled in, and it was a big truck stop up there in the mountains. And we pulled in there, and when the bus driver stopped and turned all the lights on, the guys were waking up and everything, I blitzed George Mikan across the board in that gin game. And he said, how about buying me a cup of coffee? You're too slick for me. And Hot Rod was sitting back there waking up, and he heard him say slick, and they all started calling me that. So I
you know,
probably,
Coach,
probably the people down in southern Indiana, they probably don't really know who George Mikan was. But George Mikan was the most dominant, the most early on. He was the most dominant center in the NBA. They won four world championships when he was with the Minneapolis Lakers and changed the rules of the game. He was so dominant that they had to widen the lane, and then in a game in Fort Wayne held the ball on him, and the score was 19 to 18, not 100, just 19 to 18. And Danny Biasone, who owns Syracuse National, said, "We can't have that. People are not going to come out and see somebody hold the ball." So that's when they put in the 24-second clock. So it changed. George Mikan really changed everything.
Yes, yeah, speaking of the shot clock, I know you think that was one of the major changes. I also have heard you say that you think the three-point shot is probably one of the two, along with the shot clock, one of the two most important changes that have been made in pro basketball for sure.
Well, those two changes is the biggest changes that I saw in not only in my pro career. When you stop and think about it, Joe, you know, the American Basketball Association had the 3-point line. Well, when we merged into the NBA, we had a couple guys that weren't too high on the 3-point line, and one of them was Red Auerbach with the Boston Celtics, and then later on he gets Larry Bird and Danny Ainge. They're all shooting threes out there. But anyway, we got the thing through, and you know, I felt like the fans in Denver, San Antonio, Indianapolis, New Jersey Nets. I felt like the fans there, which is the teams that made it into merged into the NBA, the ABA teams. I said the fans are no different in the rest of the league than they were in those four cities, and they loved the 3-point line. Well, you know what's happened? It's one of the most popular things. All of a sudden, they're shooting it in high school. They got a college 3-point line. So it's the big thing about it that I've always felt is you go into the last 2 minutes of a ball game. If you got an 8-point lead, let's say you got an 8-point lead last 2 minutes, the fans before that had started getting up and leaving because the team could hold the ball, you know. But with that 3-point line in there, they stayed right to the end. And there's a lot of games have been lost with 2 minutes to play with that 3-point line.
Coach, I agree with you 100%. I know when I started coaching on the high school level in the late 80s, there was no 3-point line. Within a couple years, we had a 3-point line. It changed the high school game. It gave some kids that maybe would not have been on that floor because they couldn't handle the ball as well, or they weren't big enough, but they could shoot it. You know, we had to put them out there, or we had to defend them. And I know I traded 3-point shots for free throws and overcame a 15-point lead. My team did to win a sectional round game down 15 with 2 minutes and 20 seconds left. And nobody left after we hit a couple threes, and we ended up winning that game. So you're spot on that 3-point shot and probably as well on the shot clock. You know, Coach, a lot of people may not remember this, and they should. You take over the Pacers in the ABA, and you lit that franchise on fire. 5 final appearances in the ABA, 3 ABA championships. Again, I'm coming back to being a winner. 3 ABA championships. Jimmy Ryle, Mel Daniels, Rick Mount, Roger Brown, guys like that playing for you. 3 championships, 5 final appearances. What a run it was for the Pacers in the ABA.
Well, it was great. I mean, when you look at the whole time, there were 5 years where we went to the championship series. You know, that's a lot of playoff series to get there. But we went to the championship series. We won it three times. But the other, there were three other years there when we didn't get the championship series, but we did get to the conference finals. So, you know, it was a stretch of, and I look back, the best ball club we had was in 73. And that was the front line of Mel Daniels, Roger Brown, who just went in the Hall of Fame, and George McGinnis. And that would be a tough front line for anybody to handle.
Well, of course, George McGinnis was a great high school player in the state, a great player at IU for a short time. And I just remember seeing how strong he was. I can remember watching a game. He went up for a dunk and bent the rim halfway down. And back then, there were no breakaways, and they had to wait to get a new rim and get it on the game. I mean, tell us, George McGinnis had to be, I mean, was he as strong as he looked on TV?
Hey. You know, it's sometimes, today, you look at LeBron James. LeBron James does not pump iron. He does not pump weights. It's just natural. And it's the same way with George McGinnis. Just natural. He never lifted weights or nothing. And he was, you talk about strong. He was strong in my mind. In my mind, Joe, and I've seen everything that's come down the pike, George McGinnis is one of the greatest power forwards that ever played the game. And I've told people before, I said, you know, the NBA talked about Karl Malone. I would take George McGinnis over Karl Malone any day. So, you know, he was a great player. And the great thing about it was the New York Knicks in 73 won the NBA championship. They beat the Lakers with Chamberlain and West, and so the NBA at that time thought, well, here's a good chance to embarrass the ABA. So we scheduled an exhibition game, but it was all put together, and that was a Nick Ball club with Earl of Pearl Monroe, Walt Frazier, Willis Reed, Dave DeBuscher, Bill Bradley, and they came into Indianapolis, and Bill Bradley, who later became a United States Senator, he got up down at the athletic club and started talking about the Indiana cornfields. Well, it made Roger Brown mad, and Roger that night said, "Slick, let me have him," and Roger tore him up. He tore him up, and at the end of the third quarter, now there's the NBA – were NBA champions. At the end of the third quarter, we had them down 17. So that's just let people know how good, as we went through the years, how good the ABA got. And we had players like the Iceman at San Antonio, George Gervin, who won the NBA scoring championship a couple times, and Dr. J, Julius Erving, Dan Issel, Artis Gilmore down there at Kentucky. There were a lot of great players in the ABA.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the all-time top 100 players that they put out a few years ago, there's a lot of former ABA players in that group. Hall of Famers today, and absolutely you should be one of those as well. Let's talk a little bit about the Pacers now, Coach. You know, the thing about the NBA, in my opinion, is the players are so good that if you're not ready to play, I don't care what the record is, if you're not ready to play on that night, you're going to get beat. This Pacer team under Coach Vogel, their mentality has been pretty solid up to this point, being ready to play on both ends of the court on almost night in and night out, and really have done a great job on that defensive end.
Well, that's their identity. Their identity, when they play their greatest basketball games, their identity is the defensive end of the floor. Well, you've been around coaching, and it's always been the same, Joe. It's always been a game of defense and rebounding. And if you do those two things, on nights where you can't put the ball in the hoop, you can't shoot it in the ocean, those two things, defense and rebounding, will keep you in the game and give you a chance to win.
When you look at the metamorphosis, and I call it a metamorphosis of the Pacers, went through that struggle period where they changed out a lot of players, trying to change the attitude and the makeup of the team, and not just have a team, but a real team, a team on and off the court that Indianapolis, Indiana, and Indiana in general can be proud of in the NBA. There was a struggle there. Finally, Coach Vogel comes in. We get a George Hill. We get Paul George. We get a Hibbert that's growing into being just, he's just such a space eater down in the post. And Paul George is becoming an elite player. What does, in your opinion, as a coach? And we got to have players. We all know that we're better coaches when we have really good players. But what is Frank? What has Coach Vogel brought to the Pacers in your mind as a coach to help move this team up the ladder?
Well, the biggest thing about Frank, is he is an eternal optimist. He's optimistic. You can't get him to say anything negative. He's optimistic. He's optimistic about the players. Even when one or two of them will have bad nights, he goes to that optimism. But, you know, when Larry Bird came back in, and you know, Larry won championships with the Celtics, and he knew what it took to win. And that's when he, you know, he makes the deal, gets George Hill, gets Paul George. One of the biggest signings he made was David West. David West is somewhat the backbone of this team. But we've got now we've got the bench coming off. Danny Granger's healthy, coming off the bench, and we've got a better bench than we have ever had. So everything, you know, when you're sitting there 31 and 7 in the NBA, you're doing some things right. We got the best record out of 30 ball clubs in the NBA. We got the best record right now.
Absolutely, and Coach, a win over the Knicks, I believe, last night for the Pacers, and of course that has been a great rivalry since the meltdown in the Garden and the miracle. I don't call them miracle shots, just the gamer shots of Reggie Miller. But when you look at this Pacer team, this is a long season. You well know that. You've been through it as a coach, broadcaster, player, whatever. Does this team need to make some moves, add something to the team, in your opinion? Not necessarily a specific player, but a specific position. Do they need to add something to this team in order to make that deep run and maybe get to an NBA Finals?
Well, yes and no. I feel like Joe, that if we had a better backup center, for Roy Hibbert, so that when he goes out of a ball game, we can have a guy coming in there that has a low post presence. But I don't know if Larry will make any moves. This club, the way it stands right now, has a chance with about four or five other ball clubs, has a chance to win the whole ball of wax. We have to wait until May and June to find out really what's going on.
Yeah, the NBA is a long season, and you just got to stay as much physically tough. You got to stay mentally tough. Coach, in your book, Boom Baby, My Basketball Life in Indiana, I want to at least make one more comment about it. As you get into the book, and it's a wonderful book, it just shows how much you love family, how much you love just the life you've had here in Indiana. You said, and your partner in life, 60 years, Nancy's been an inspiration to me and our five children, and you go on to name them. This is in the book. I'm reading from it. Nancy is the first to admit she's a little demanding. Her philosophy, everything you say or do affects somebody else, either good or bad. No gossiping, no lies, don't cheat, be respectful, give it everything you've got, love everything, and always go to church on Sunday. I love that. Those are wonderful things to live by. And you know what? As much as you're a coach, that sounds like a coach talking to his team.
Well, that's the way she's lived her life. That's the way she's lived her life. She runs the show here, Joe. I don't. She runs the show and always has. Always has. She's been a great, great mother. But boy, this grandmother thing. I mean, she's out of sight. These grandkids, we got 12 of them. Boy, they think she, you know, they love their grandma. So, you know, it's been good. It's really been good. And you know, you mentioned New York Knicks game last night. Reggie Miller was in with ESPN to do the game, and of course I was with Reggie for 18 years and a lot of boom babies in that time, but I still look back at that one. And you said, well, it's not a miracle. Well, it was a miracle, because he scored 8 points in 13 seconds at Madison Square Garden. And it's really probably the way it happened is probably the greatest finish of a game I've ever seen.
Coach, we've got one more question for you before we let you go, and we just really appreciate the time you've given us, and we want to respect it as well. We got one more question. Go ahead.
Okay, Coach, this is Joe. Got a comment from a longtime listener, and he said, you know, it wasn't a question as much as his comment. He said, thanks for the memories from a kid from Elwood that used to sit in the rafters in the Coliseum with my dad and brothers with Hook's discount tickets. Neto, Mel, Roger, Freddie, George, Billy, and the rest of the characters were my life back then. Thank you.
Isn't that terrific? Yeah, that's true.
It certainly isn't, and you're terrific. And we absolutely understand you're just a human being, but you have really stayed true to who you are and your love. And, folks, I really believe, to our listeners, I really believe this. I believe you love not only basketball and your family, but you love Indiana, because you have been one of the great ambassadors and made significant contributions that may not ever get up in the state house, may not show up in the history book, but I really believe that the recognition we get in Indiana and Indianapolis has a big part to do with Bobby Slick Leonard and his commitment to Indiana, to Indianapolis, to the Pacers, to the state in general. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, you know, I'm a Hoosier. I'm a Hoosier, and let me close it out and wish everybody down in southern Indiana a great 2014, a great year. Have fun. Have a lot of fun.
Coach, thank you so much, and we appreciate it. And hopefully when we get up to a Pacer game, we can walk by you if you're on the radio and say hi, and also gab you back on the show. Give our best to Nancy and the rest of your family. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Jerry Palm with CBS Sports will be on. We'll talk a little bracketology for the NCAA. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Toyota in Jasper. You know what happens when you sell a bunch of new Toyotas? You trade for hundreds of great pre-owned cars, trucks, vans, and sport utilities. Many are certified, have factory warranty remaining, fully inspected, and they're all priced to sell. Hurry in for the best selection. Uvalar & Sons Toyota, where customers send their friends for a great pre-owned vehicle since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
We're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. This is the coach, Ken Schulteis, and we've got a great guest with us, Jerry Palm of CBS Sports, the bracketologist. And he's already working on that NCAA tournament for all you listeners out here who love to play that bracket as we get down to the tournament once it's named and follow it before. Jerry Palm, welcome to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hi, how's it going?
Hey, it's wonderful to have you. Jerry, I'm on your site as we're talking, the bracketology site, and I'm looking. I know you're going to – I guess you're going to update it later today.
It's been updated already. If you go to the bracket on CBSSports.com, it's already updated.
Awesome, awesome. And for our listeners, please go to that site. You've done a tremendous job of setting that up and putting those teams in, at least the way you're seeing it from a bracketology. You also talk about who's in, who's on the bubble, who's first out, your number one seed overall, and you just rank them on down the line. It's a tremendous start to what is going to be a crazy year in college basketball as far as these conferences play out and things like that. Do you see a lot of parity right now in the conferences? Do you, even with your overall one seed and your number one seeds as the way you have it today, do you see this changing quite a bit as the year goes on?
Well, the current number one seeds are Arizona, which is the overall number one, Syracuse, Michigan State, and Wisconsin. Wisconsin, despite the loss to Indiana this week. But, yeah, I think there is quite a bit of parity. I don't think anybody is head and shoulders better than anyone else. Arizona and Syracuse have played the best to this point. But, you know, if the tournament started today, you could easily find a dozen teams that have a legitimate chance of winning it. I think that, you know, the Big 12 is pretty strong at the top half. The Big 10, of course, is really strong. And it's, you know, strong enough that for teams like, you know, Indiana and Purdue and Illinois, it might be hard to put together the number of wins they need to make the tournament just because the rest of the league is so good. But, you know, the A-10 is pretty good this year, the Atlantic 10. The ACC has shown quite a bit of parity, dominated to this point by its newest members, Syracuse and Pittsburgh, who play each other this weekend. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're seeing a lot of very competitive races early on in the conferences in college basketball, and I think that that's actually a good thing for the sport.
You know, a lot of our listeners, even though we have listeners from around the world via the internet, a lot of our listeners are Big Ten fans. Of course, IU and Purdue, Illinois, Ohio State. Before this mini losing streak of Ohio State, and it's really not many when you're talking about the conference itself, three consecutive losses by the Buckeyes. How has that shifted from a bracketology standpoint? How has that shifted Ohio State overall in the scheme of things?
Well, before they lost, they were undefeated, but hadn't really beaten anybody of note. Their best win, the best team that they've beaten was probably Notre Dame, and Notre Dame looked better back then than they do now. I mean, Notre Dame has kind of slipped down to just outside the top 100 of the RPI, or maybe they're 100 today, but, I mean, they're right around there, so that win doesn't even look as good as it used to. In RPI terms, the best team that Ohio State has beaten this year is North Dakota State. And that lack of quality wins wasn't too big of a deal when you're 15-0, but now that you're 15-3, you're almost proving you're starting to erase any doubt that you're capable of beating good teams. You know, they lost at Michigan State in overtime, which is a great performance, you know, because that's obviously an excellent team, and to go to their place and take them to overtime is good. But then they lose at home to Iowa, another good team. They go on the road last night to Minnesota, another good team, and get beat. Now there's, you know, you start to plant seeds of doubt. Is the team ever going to beat anybody good? And until they do, those doubts are going to be there. They were a number one seed when they were undefeated in my bracket. They are now an eight in the bracket I did today because they continue to provide doubt whether or not they should be good. And if they don't, I don't know if they play this weekend or not, but if they don't pick up a win between now and the ranking come out on Monday, I don't think you can justify a top 25 vote for that team.
And then you've got a team like Indiana that went into the Big Ten Conference play with no signature win, really, of note, played some good teams, but they lost. Syracuse, of course, pounded the Hoosiers at Syracuse. They go in, they do get a comeback win over Penn State on the road, which is not going to be anything signature in the conference. But then they get the big win against Wisconsin at home. How does that change IU's fortunes looking towards the tournament?
Well, IU has got five losses, none of them to terrible teams, the worst of which, Notre Dame. But, you know, they had the sort of the same problem Ohio State did, that they had shown pretty conclusively they couldn't beat anyone good. Well, now they've shown that they can beat someone good. So they've got, you know, that win over Wisconsin at home, which was big for them in terms of starting to build a tournament resume, but it's not enough to overcome all of the losses to this point. And the fact of the matter is their only other top 100 RPI win is a win over Washington on a neutral floor, and Washington may not be in the top 100 for long. So it's going to take some wins. IU's got to build up a number of wins that are good wins and probably even very good wins if they're going to overcome these losses that they have early in the season to actually make the NCAA tournament. They're not in the bracket I did today, but they're certainly closer because – of that win over Wisconsin, but it's going to take more than that.
And I know the answer to this long-term is win, baby. You got to win. But yep. A lot of our listeners, of course, Joe is a Purdue graduate.
Right.
And where's what's Purdue going to have to do? I mean, I know I'm saying you got to win, but they got to have some signature wins to move into this.
Yeah, there's no question. You know, the win at Illinois was good because Illinois is a team that they would be competing with possibly for a tournament spot if Purdue does well enough in the league to do that. But Purdue's going to have to win a lot of games. I mean, they did not play a good non-conference schedule. They lost to Washington State, who's not a good team. So, you know, they didn't pick up, you know, any great wins outside the league, the best of which is the win at West Virginia. You know, the encouraging thing about Purdue is that they've actually played reasonably well away from home. So, you know, that bodes well for a team that, you know, that's a young team. That's not the kind of thing you usually see. So, you know, they've got two games coming up, Penn State, Northwestern. I mean, Purdue is past the point they can afford to lose games to Penn State or Northwestern, and Purdue always plays badly in Evanston, no matter how good that team is. But then, you know, they've got opportunities. I mean, the great thing for Purdue and Indiana right now is that they need to pick up wins and they need to pick up quality wins, and they play in a league that gives them the opportunity to do that. If they were in the SEC, for example, it would be a lot harder for them to build the kind of resume that they need to do because the quality win opportunities just aren't as frequent. But because they're in the Big Ten, those opportunities present themselves. The question is, for both of those teams, are they up to the challenge?
And speaking of the Big Ten in general, what are your thoughts? I know that a lot of what you do goes on strength of schedule and the statistics and things, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But what do you think about, as a Big Ten guy, a fan in general, what do you think about the Big Ten? Are these teams overrated at this point in your mind,
or
are they where they need to be? The Wisconsin, the Michigan State, those kind of teams,
yep.
Ohio State was way up there. Is this just a factor of the conference is just going to beat up on each other, or would these teams be able to go out throughout the country and compete and be a top 5, 6, 7 team?
Oh, I think that they've proven that they can already this season. I think they've proven that. You know, Michigan State and Wisconsin are going to be Final Four contenders all season long. Ohio State may end up being that too, but we're not seeing it at the moment. Iowa is vastly improved from where they've been. I mean, that's a legitimate top 25 team. Minnesota is a really good team too. That's like a team that's going to probably be on the fringes of the top 25 at times this year. Indiana, Purdue, Illinois are all good teams that just need to put some wins together, and you certainly can't take any of those teams lightly at all. But even Nebraska, Northwestern, and Penn State are good enough to beat you if you don't take them seriously. So that league, top to bottom, it's a challenge every night. You cannot take a night off, or you'll get embarrassed in this league.
Now, I'm going to throw one at you that, again, I'm projecting out. If Wichita State of the Missouri Valley, who was a Final Four team last year, if they can win out, could they get to a number one seed?
Maybe. It depends on what other teams do, because Wichita State's not going to have the high-quality wins that it's almost a case like Gonzaga last year, which got a number one seed. And I think Gonzaga, I don't believe, finished the regular season undefeated. But I think they had just one loss. But I think, if Wichita State actually is able to run the table, personally, I think they deserve a number one seed. They have beaten St. Louis, who's probably in the top 25, and they beat them on the road. They have a win over Tennessee, who may or may not make the tournament. If they get through the Missouri Valley, which is a pretty good league, undefeated, I think they deserve a number one seed, but whether or not they actually get it might depend on who the competition is.
And then I got to jump down to a team that a lot of people are following, Kentucky, Coach Calipari's young group, the SEC. This team, where do you have them ranked since they lost to Arkansas? What did they drop? Or are they still holding about a six or five? Have they dropped?
Yeah, I got them as a six. Kentucky is, it's a young team. I actually kind of thought that they were coming around. But right now they're a bit of a home court hero. They've been struggling away from home. They did win at Vanderbilt, but that's their only true road win. They beat Providence on a neutral floor. But otherwise it's all home cooking for them, all four of their losses away from home. So that is typical of what you see of a young team, which kind of goes counter to what I talked about Purdue earlier. So Kentucky, got to mature some more. The talent is definitely there. They've even got some experience on that team. It just hasn't come together quite yet. And it's funny because if you look at the preseason top five, you had Michigan State, Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, and Louisville. Other than Michigan State, those other four teams are all struggling at some level to find themselves, to find their identity. Kansas might be coming around. Kansas has shown some signs the last couple of weeks that they finally might be playing to the level of their talent, but those other three teams are coming up way short.
Yeah, you look at that. A lot of these teams that we're talking about, not a lot of them, but several of them, they're dependent on key play from freshmen. That's just tough, especially as the season wears on. But Kansas has kind of picked it up a little bit. Another team that interests me, because he was an assistant at Purdue for years, and he was Illinois, Kansas State. This is a team that one night, they'll look great. They'll beat the ranked team. The next night they'll play the ranked team. They don't look great. What do you think about a team like Kansas State?
Well, I think that Kansas State looks like a middle-of-the-bracket kind of team, somebody you see maybe in the 8, 9, 10 range long term. They've had a pretty good start to their season. They've got some nice wins. I mean, they beat Oklahoma State. They beat Gonzaga. They beat Oklahoma. They've got four or five wins over teams that are probably going to make the tournament already, so that's a pretty good thing. But, there's some – then did some inconsistency. You got an early season loss to Northern Colorado, which, is a real head scratcher. You've got a loss to Charlotte, who's not a threat to anyone but themselves. So, they've got to be more consistent. They can't take too many more losses like that. But the Big 12 is a good league this year. So, lots of opportunities for them to win some games that are really going to help them out. And then they've just got to take care of some business.
Anybody been a shocker to you? You talked about a head scratching loss. But has a team, a couple of teams, some head scratchers? What's happened? Does a North Carolina befuddle you? I mean, are there some teams out
totally.
You're saying, gosh, they shouldn't be here and they're here?
Yeah, North Carolina, is the king of head scratchers. To beat Michigan State one night, lose to UAB the next. I don't know what to make of North Carolina. I'm not sure Roy Williams knows what to make of North Carolina. If he doesn't, I'm no good to him. But that's a team that. seems to play to the level of its competition, and when you do that, sometimes you get burned, and they seem to be getting burned a lot. They're 0-3 in the ACC. That's just shocking to me.
And then another guy, coaching his team, San Diego State. Hey,
yep.
Playing well. Right now,
yeah,
you've got
well.
Them up there solid in the brackets.
Yeah, they're a 3 seed in the current bracket. Steve Fisher's done a great job with this team. Their only loss is to undefeated Arizona. They won at Kansas. They beat Creighton. I mean, this is a very good basketball team that is the clear favorite in the Mountain West, and I think it's going to play for a very high seed, earn that kind of a seed, and probably play to it in the tournament as well.
Yeah, I just love what Coach Fisher's done out there. It's just consistent. You know, some people may have their feelings about him from the past, but I'm just going to say about him, the guy has been successful. He is who he is, and he's just done a great job out there. You know, Jerry, when you look, and I want to tell our listeners, they can follow you on Twitter, at JP Palm CBS. You're always on there tweeting about, keeping people updated, and you're also communicating with the people that are following you on Twitter, so I encourage them to do that. Can you give just a couple key points that you look at when you're putting your brackets together? For some of our listeners who may not be familiar with bracketology and how it works, can you just give a couple of pointers to them on what you're looking at as you put these together?
Yeah, it's your strength of schedule, especially outside the league, is an important factor to the committee, especially when it comes down to those last few teams in and out of the bracket. But they want to see that you can play tournament quality competition, beat teams like that, and do so away from home. That's primarily what they're looking for. Obviously, not everybody in the tournament is going to be able to show that. Better to have wins over tournament quality teams at home than none at all. But it's a bit of there's a lot of hair splitting, but they want, you know, consistency is an important thing. So, you know, we just talked about Kansas State. You know, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're losing at home to Northern Colorado. You know, North Carolina's the king have been consistent. Their team's schizophrenia this year. I mean, teams like that are really hard for the committee to deal with. They want to see quality wins. They want to see consistent play. They don't want to see bad losses. And they want to see that you tested yourself, especially outside your league.
Well, I know that there are a lot of our listeners and just fans in general out there. This is, go to CBSSports.com, get signed up, press on Bracketology. It's a great site. He updates it. He's got first round, second round. He's got their rankings on how they appear, his number one team overall, the palm reader, which I think is great. Get signed in and be a part of it. You know, Jerry, the season, each as we move forward and then we get into some of the conference tournaments later, I mean, it's, if you are a follower of the brackets and you want to see how this is going, I mean, each week in the conference starts to get very critical, especially for teams who are trying to get in. Name teams like in Indiana, you got to get some signature wins, and you can't afford to lose to teams that you have no business losing to.
Yep, that's absolutely right. And in Indiana, can't count on the name on the front of their jersey helping them. They're going to have to earn it.
Yeah, and I think that's what's great about the NCAA tournament right now. And the brackets and the way the group gets together and picks them, it's not about who's on your jersey. You got to get the wins, and you got to get signature wins when you need them. That pre-conference period is important. If you're not going to play good teams, it's going to bring you. You got to win somewhere. When people go to the site and the palm reader, I think the palm reader is great. Can you tell a couple things about the site? Listeners, if they go to the site, sign up, what they can expect?
Yeah, well, the first thing you see is if you go to cbssports.com/Jerry, it takes you directly to the bracket. And so you can see the most current bracket. When the bubble watch is posted, you'll see that. You'll be able to – there'll be tabs for that. You can see the RPI. You can see the nitty-gritty report, which is the way the committee looks at the data. But I think the two features that are really cool, one you mentioned, the palm reader, where you can see – you can look up your team and see which teams you're rooting for today to improve your ratings. And you can actually sign up and get that delivered in your email every day. And then the other thing that's really cool is the team comparison tool, where you can pick two teams and look at their schedule side by side and compare their rankings and their strength of schedule and common opponents and all of that side by side, and that's a really cool tool as well.
Last thing, Jerry, and I want to respect your time. We have listeners that follow us who are Indiana State fans, and, of course, Indiana State had those non-conference wins last year, which kind of vaulted them and kept them in the hunt for a bid. They've got a solid team. Do they have any chance of making this field?
They do. but they're probably going to have to beat Wichita State at some point to make that happen. They also need Notre Dame to play better because that's their big signature win. I think if those two things happen, Indiana State's got a chance. If they don't beat Wichita State at any point this season, they probably won't be in good enough shape to get an at-large.
Well, I'm sure Wichita State's going to be a big team if you want a chance to get in out of the Missouri Valley. You've got to beat them somewhere along the line.
No question.
Great to have you, Jerry. I'm telling you, I go to the site. I follow you on Twitter. It's great stuff. If you're following the NCAA, I got to tell our listeners, you've got to get out there, get to CBSSports.com, get into Bracketology, sign in, follow JP at JP Palm on Twitter. Thanks for being on the show, Jerry.
All right, thank you.
I hope to have you back soon. When we come back, we're going to talk about the big rivalry game locally. Lagodi Lions and Barrie Vikings throw the ball up again tonight. One of many games they played in the past. Again, it starts again. I think it's at Lagodi in the Lions Den. We'll be back to talk about that with our next guest. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? Well, team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back.
And we're back.
Coach K and Joe. Oh, Joe, you going to take this introduction?
No, I didn't know if you were or not, so you go ahead.
You're back. We're back on the show. Of course, we've had Bobby Slick Leonard on the show. Boy, that was a treat. And we just had Jerry Palm with CBS Bracketology. You talk about learning something. Don't forget to follow him on Twitter, at JP Palm. And next, and he's not any least of our guests on this show, we're talking Lagodi Lion, Barrie Viking basketball, or for you Barrie fans, Barrie Viking basketball versus Lagodi Lions. It doesn't matter. Run them either way you want. This is a great rivalry, great tradition of high school basketball in Southern Indiana. And with us to talk about this game, this renewing of the rivalry, WRZR's Greg Bateman. Greg, great to have you on the show.
Well, thanks, Coach. That's obviously a tough act to follow, those two guests that you've had. You've had a great show so far.
We have had a great show. We have it every week for our listeners. If you're new to the show, come back every week and listen to us on podcasts, especially if you're in the Davis County area. We want their comments as well. Good, bad, or ugly, we'll take them as long as they're not too vulgar. Coach K's heard it all. Believe me, I've heard it all from some of those fans up at Bar Eve and Lagodi in the past. Greg, it's a renewing of a long-time rivalry. Before it was Bar Eve, it was Montgomery, but you have the Lions. We've had some great people, of course, Jack Butcher, Joe Todrank, just some great individual players, individual coaches involved in this rivalry. And we're going to throw it up again on Saturday in Lagodi. I believe it's at Lagodi between the Vikings and the Lions.
It is at Lagodi, and it is a game this year that's a little unusual because there obviously is a heavy, heavy favorite this year in Barrie Eve. If people don't know by now, Lagodi is struggling this year. Coach, it is a year like no other in history where we lost everybody except for one person who would be coming back that would be our leading scorer. And because of disciplinary reasons, he's out for the year. And had another one that was disciplined for half the year. He's just now back. And another than that would have played varsity ball, but he transferred out. So basically, starting off the season, Coach Wagner had what for the most part, would amount to be a junior varsity team. And really, despite the three-win season so far, Coach, he's done a remarkable job, and the progress they've seen that we've seen has been tremendous. I just don't know if it's going to be enough, though, against a tremendous Barrie team tomorrow night.
Well, there's no doubt Barrie is a very solid basketball team. I've seen them this year. My son Josh Schulteis is a volunteer assistant, teaches at Barrie. He's on the staff with Coach Hughes. Coach Hughes does a great job, as does Coach Wagoner. And I think the interesting thing, it's tough to coach at any level. And I mean any level, grade school on up, when you have parents and fans and players, it's just tough to coach, especially when people care about it. They don't care about it anywhere more than they do in the Montgomery area, which makes up Barrie, Cannelburg, of course, as well as Lagodi. Traditionally, they love their basketball. They have one of the great histories and traditions. I was at the game last year in Montgomery at Barrie at Kavanaugh Court. I saw Lagodi pull off what would have been an upset at the time. Of course, Lagodi had a very good team. Barrie did as well. Not a major upset, more of an upset of maybe who people thought would win at their home court. So I won't rule out anything, but I understand the tough season that Coach Wagoner is going through. My last season at Jasper, the cupboard, we lost a bunch of great players. We had one move away, one decide to concentrate on baseball, and it took a team that really would have been a 15-win season, took us down to that JV-type level, trying to learn how to win. You know, you talk about his positive attitude. In this game on Saturday, you've got Barrie has been number one most of the year, if not all year. They're coming off a loss in the Kentucky-Indiana Challenge at Freedom Hall against a pretty good Elizabethtown Kentucky team. Take nothing away from that game. That doesn't help the stakes of a young Lion team trying to find its way, because Barrie's not going to come in here after a loss and take it for granted.
No, they're really not. That does not help Coach Wagoner and his team at all. I don't think that, in just talking to him, that he got a lot out of that particular game. Definitely a game that Barrie felt like they could have won, and probably if you played 10 times against that really good Kentucky team, I think they feel like they probably would have had the best of them. And in talking to Coach Wagoner yesterday, getting ready for our pregame interview for tomorrow night, he's talking about Barrie. They do have some flaws, not a lot, but he likes to think that for them to be successful in a tournament, they're going to have to get more scores other than what they have right now in Micah Bullock and Addison Wagler, and they've got capable scores. But he's hoping that that doesn't happen until after Saturday night, because Lagodi's scoring is way down this year, Coach. They're averaging about 36 points a game, so it's going to have to be in that 40-point range for Lagodi to be even remotely competitive, at least in my opinion, Saturday night.
Now, Greg, I have not seen the Lions play. Is this a situation where we're still playing not an up-and-down game, but just a normal game with the Lions versus their opponents, or is Coach Wagoner pulling a page out of the book where he grew up a little bit with, when Coach Butcher's talent wasn't the greatest, he'd pull that ball out. He'd make the opponent have to work for the ball on defense and cherish the ball on offense. Has Lagodi went to that type of offense where they're kind of spreading the floor and taking control of the ball, or are they still just playing a normal game?
No, they're trying to, Coach. They really are trying to take that page. I don't know. I haven't heard Coach Wagoner say that that's exactly what he's doing, but it looks like, from a fan's perspective, from the broadcaster's perspective, that's exactly what he's doing. And you're exactly right. Coach Butcher at times didn't have the most talent on the floor, but he knew how to use it. And Coach Wagoner definitely doesn't have the most talent on the floor, and that's what he's trying to get his kids to learn. The problem has been early in the season, Coach, holding onto the ball. Turnovers have been a really, really difficult situation, but they're getting better and better. So to answer your question, yeah, they're not going to go up and down the floor and play a normal game. They're going to play possession basketball and hope that they can hang on to the basketball and limit Barrie's possessions, because that's the only way they can stay in the games, at least at this point in the season.
Yeah, you make a great point, and I think that for our listeners, that's the key. You can go into a game and say, we're going to control the tempo. We're going to make the extra passes. We're going to spread the floor, whether it's a four corner, three out, two under, whatever you decide to do. But you got to be able to take care of the basketball, which means you got to have some people who know how when to dribble and when not to. And in a control offense, the less you dribble, the better. And when to make the bounce pass, when to make the chest pass, not to make too long of a pass, especially out front, that can get stolen by some of the, you know, some quickness on Barif James, Micah Bullough. Those guys are going to be able to put some pressure on the basketball. So holding the basketball or controlling the tempo is not going to be that easy against Barif.
It is not going to be easy at all, particularly with the ball team that really does not have a true point guard. So you can imagine from a coaching perspective how difficult that is. Back in Coach Butcher's day, there was always that guard who was in control of the game, knew what he was going to do with every pass and where it was going. But right now these players are really learning. It'll be a really difficult matchup for the Lions Saturday night. You mentioned Micah Bullough, those long arms, Logan James, a good defensive player. The Lions do have a couple of pretty good three-point shooters, but I suspect that Coach Hughes is well aware of that, and he'll be out front making sure that they don't get those shots. And that makes it doubly difficult because we do not have big when I say we, I'm talking about Ligoti Lions now, do not have big players and strength underneath. So it will definitely have to be a possession game, and the Lions are going to have to take care of the basketball to be able to be competitive Saturday night. But they're growing, they're learning, and one thing you mentioned at the top of this, Coach, is that the Ligoti Lion fan base, the Barif fan base, you know better than anybody, the Jasper fan base, they're not going to get used to losing. So it's not a lot of fun. But at the same time, it is fun watching these kids grow and learn. If you understand the circumstances, where we were at the beginning of the year, where we are at the midpoint of the range, and it's exciting to see where we'll be at the end of the season. And almost all of these kids are underclassmen. There's not one senior on the ball club. So there is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel.
And I think that's the big thing for our listeners. If you live in the Ligoti area, you got to remember that. You're talking about a young team. You're trying to raise its basketball IQ to go along with the talents that will, the skills that will come as well. But you can only do so much with where they're at this point. And I'm sure Coach Wagner's like I was, and Coach Butcher, and the good coaches that are out there, they're going to try to take these guys and expand their game individually, but most importantly, expand it as a team, the do's and don'ts, take care of the ball, eliminate the turnovers that you can eliminate, control what you can control, and your opponent sometimes has a lot to say about that, but every day in practice, it's about getting better, so every game you can play each possession and not the scoreboard. And I know if I was coaching, when I was at Washington Catholic, when I was at Jasper, and the younger teams I've worked with since then, and if I coach again, it's not about the scoreboard as you're growing. Even as a good team, it's about each possession because in the end, Greg, and you've seen it, oh, my gosh, I don't tens of times, especially over in that area, the game can come down to that last possession. And if you're focused on possessions and not the scoreboard, a team like Ligoti can grow leaps and bounds this season, and especially on Saturday night.
And they will have to do that. And I'll be remiss, Coach, if I don't mention, typically, as you well know, and you were there last year, it's a capacity crowd, many times standing room only. This year may not be because of what people might perceive as a non-competitive game, but I think you can appreciate this. One thing that I do want your listeners to know, if they're in the towns and they're not planning on going, but if they don't have anything going on, come on over because it is going to be a special evening. They will be honoring all of the 1,000-point scorers in Ligoti High School and St. John's history, men's and women's, of which there are 22, and 19 will be there to receive commemorative basketballs of their 1,000 points. And no question, Coach, if you looked at that list, there'd be so many memories that you have of so many of those players that you coached against, maybe even played against. And it'll be a treat for anybody who comes over to Jack Butcher Arena Saturday night.
Oh, you can believe me. People should get out and enjoy that. I'm hoping to be there on Saturday as well. And, yes, I coached against probably a bunch of them and grew up watching them when my dad was coaching and, of course, played as well against some pretty good Ligoti teams. Now, the interesting thing that people can't forget about the history of Ligoti, you had St. John's there, which had some pretty good basketball teams, and by the fate of natural disaster, the school burns, and Ligoti comes together, and the rest is history, and Jack Butcher, the all-time winningest coach in the state, and, of course, got to play against him, got to coach against him. Ligoti just has a great tradition. But Bar Eve has, too. And, Greg, just quickly, to respect your time, but to let our listeners understand, this Bar Eve program, especially under Coach Hughes, and they've had some pretty darn good coaches come through there. They've had just decades of winning records. They have, even though Ligoti dominates the series, the last 10, 15 years, Bar Eve has stepped up and played this thing, if not the lead, pretty even.
I think in the last 40 years, or 40 games, Coach, it's 21-19. Ligoti has the advantage. That's how close it is, and not quite as close over the overall when you go back to the Bar Eve and Montgomery and Ligoti days. But I don't remember the Montgomery days, but I remember almost all of these Bar Eve teams that have come through. And I know Coach Hughes would not want me to say this, but this is the deepest, this is the strongest team I've ever seen from Bar Eve. And to think that next year they might even be better, that's a little bit scary. But they are a very strong and deep team. And I don't really see anybody stopping them in 1A this year. But, again, that's why you throw up the ball and play the game, because you just never know.
Yeah, once you get through that, first of all, sectional is going to be tough, even though they should be favored. Regional will test their mettle. Of course, as you move on in the tournament, you just don't know who's going to play well that day. And that's what's so tough about the tournament. You can't have an off day because it's one and done. Some great personalities on the sidelines. I mentioned Coach Todrank, Coach Omer, Coach Hughes, Coach Butcher, Coach Wagoner now, Coach Brett. This is just a history-filled walk down memory lane between these two programs. Real quickly before we let you go, Greg, just give me an overall view of basketball right there. Ligoti, Bar Eve, Washington, North Davies. Just give our listeners just a quick overview of those teams and who looks good and who's struggling.
Well, I've seen them all. Seen Washington a couple of times. Bar Eve beat them when we saw them, and they handled Ligoti pretty well. And what I'm impressed about Washington for the most part is their defense. Their offense struggles a little bit. Their defense comes after it all night long, every single game. Just not talented enough probably to win that very tough sectional over there this year. From the North Davies side, saw them play Ligoti last week. They struggled a little bit. They were probably lucky to get out of Jack Butcher with a win over the Lions. Then the next night, we did the broadcast, North Davies in Springs Valley, and North Davies looked like the North Davies that we're used to seeing. They put up, in this case, a lot of points on the board, and they did everything right. Bar Eve, as I mentioned again, just the talent is just unbelievable. Coach Hughes has just developed a program there that is probably one of the best ones in the state. And the Lions are rebuilding, but what I am really proud of our fan base, Coach, is that most of the sensible ones understand. Some don't, and I understand that as well. It's such a passionate fan base. But most understand, and most are really supporting them when they need supported most. And I can tell you one thing, Coach Wagner's not going to quit. Every time I talk to him in a pregame or postgame, he's talking about going up to the sectional, possibly shocking the world. And whether he believes that or not, only he knows. But at least he knows that maybe by the time the season is over, he'll have his team believing that very thing.
And it can happen. I've lived it. I had a team at Washington Catholic. We started out 0-3, we were at 2-3 and 5 at one point, and went on to kind of shock it in the sectionals. We took out a very good Ligoti team and Jack Butcher that year. So it can happen. Teams grow. They get a little bit better. They find out who they are. They find their niche. Maybe they hit the free throws. They do what they need to do. And on that night, on that given night, if the other team's not playing their best, if you can hang around, and that's what I love about basketball, it's a game of runs. If you can hang around and make that extended run, you got a chance to win. Great talking to you. Knox, Davies, Martin County, Dubois County, all that area around here is still a hotbed of basketball. And as I've said before, sensible fans are unsensible. It never bothered me as long as they showed up. as long as they were at the games, as long as they were cheering the team. If they were on me as a coach or on the coaches, that's okay. Just try to keep it as clean as you can, right, Greg?
That's exactly right. Try to keep it as clean as you can. And for the most part, the Lions fans have. And they'll live through this, and there'll be another day when the Lions are back on top of the world. It may just be a couple of years or so, but we'll look forward to that day. And we'll look forward to Saturday night because, like you said, anything can happen, and maybe tomorrow night will be that night.
Yeah, and you know what? I hope to be there and just be a part of another great rivalry game and Hoosier Hysteria and watching these kids play a little bit. I'm looking forward to it. If you're not doing anything, folks, drive up to Ligoti. Beautiful, beautiful arena, great little town. Got some great little places to pick up a pizza here and there. It'll be a lot of fun. Greg, thanks for joining us. I hope you come back on the Coach K and Joe Show.
All right, Coach, and by the same token, if you're up there tomorrow night, come up to the booth. We'd be glad to promote your show. It's a great show, and very much enjoyed talking to you today.
Certainly appreciate it. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to rant, mailbag, and maybe talk about some of the Facebook posts that got a little upset with us, but we'll be back. We're not going to dodge anything. We play it straight. If you want to talk to us, you can. Text me at 812-480-9449 or call the show. We want to hear from you. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Right, this is Tony Uvalar with Uvalar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Right now, Uvalar's has a huge selection of awesome pre-owned vehicles, cars, trucks, vans, sport utilities, in most all price categories. And they're all priced to sell. Some are certified, and some have special low APRs, but best of all, they are all priced to sell. Uvalar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends for great pre-owned vehicles since 1929.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? Well, team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom.
It's not the U.S. Postal mailbag. It's not the Joe mailbag. It's the Coach K mailbag.
New York and New Jersey love Coach K. Go Hoosiers! Coach K speaks the truth! Woo!
Now here's Coach K and Joe with this week's Coach K's mailbag.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe show for the Coach K and Coach K mailbag. It's not the Joe mailbag, as the promo said. It's the Coach K mailbag. And Coach, are you ready?
Yeah, I am. Joe, before we start, I want to let our listeners know, listen, this is a great time in the financial markets. And if you're still sitting on the sidelines, or you've got a 401k, a rollover you need to do and get into an IRA, or set up some 509s for your kids for college, or Roth IRAs, you know, this is the time to do it. And Janet Schulteis with Edward Jones, financial advisor, located in Evansville, but she can work with anybody, anywhere. She has clients throughout the continental United States. Give her a call at 812-479-8125. Beth, her assistant over there, and Janet, they're going to put you in the risk tolerance that's good for you, but also in a position to prosper. And, folks, isn't that what it's all about, taking the money you worked hard to earn to make more money that can perpetuate for you and your family as you move into your life and your kids into their life and your grandkids. This is the time to do it. This is a good time to get in the market, establish yourself. Give Janet Schulteis a call at Edward Jones. Again, that's 812-479-8125. Joe, let's hit that mailbag.
Okay, here's the first question. This comes from Mark in Washington, and he wants to know, Coach K, why do you have a problem
with the kids storming the court at IU. They're just having fun and being college kids.
I know what you're saying, Mark, and Chris Brothers and a few other people that just don't like my opinion and former WC great Toby Madison's opinion and ESPN analysts' opinion. I just don't think storming the court should be on a signature program win. You beat number one. It's a program lifting. It gives you an opportunity to get to number one. I mean, I think there's a psychological thing there, and I think that if you haven't coached or played, maybe you don't quite get that. But you know what Wisconsin said? You know what Bo Ryan said after he chewed his team out for not being the way they needed to be? Bo Ryan said, look, they stormed the court. That's how important this game is. That's how important Wisconsin basketball is, our program is. Okay? That's how important the program is. And I don't like that. I don't like a coach being able to build into his players that we are looked at above Indiana in the Big Ten, that even Indiana sees a victory over Wisconsin as a stalwart, a signature win in their great tradition. I just don't buy it. I just don't think it's necessary. I understand the college kids, hey, here's my chance to get on TV. I'll storm that court. Or here's my chance to get up close personal with some of the players. I get that. But you know what? If nothing else, people can get hurt. If nothing else, players can get hurt. Those fans storm onto that floor, one trips one, another trips another, and folks don't say it doesn't happen because it does happen. Kids are tripped, they fall over, all of a sudden somebody gets hurt. Maybe it's a player that gets hurt. Now you might say, well, what are the odds? Well, the odds are better than what you think. And so I got a problem with it from a lot of different aspects. But let's save storming the court, if we even do that, as a signature win. Why not everybody get up, stand, go crazy in the stands, bang on the bleachers, cheer as loud as you can, and don't leave the court. Let the players leave the court and then keep cheering so they come back out on the court and do a curtain call. I've seen it happen. I've not only seen it happen on the college level, I've seen curtain call happen on the high school level where the fans didn't leave the court. They continued to cheer until the team came back out. I've seen it happen, folks. It does happen. So, Joe, that's why I got a problem with it. But most of all, psychologically, Wisconsin, beating Wisconsin is not a court stormer. I understand why young guys want to do it, young ladies want to do it. Who knows? If I was in college, I might have done it. But I don't think it's necessary when you beat Wisconsin.
Okay. Tony from Jasper wants to know about the boos. How do you feel about the boos for Crean when Crean took Bonley out? Is there a revolt brewing in the IU Nation?
You know, I was shocked by that. I understand why it caught people off guard to bring in Etherington, I believe it was, for Vonley, especially in that situation. I tell you what I was really shocked at, Tony. I was shocked and happy at how the fans understood the repercussion of that move. I don't think they were booing the player, and I don't know that they were booing Coach Crean. I think they were questioning the move, and that's how fans can question it. That's how their voices question it during a game. They boo. The analyst can say, man, I don't know if this was a pretty good move. I thought the analyst did a good job of telling the crowd or the listeners, hey, I guess he did this because he was worried about so-and-so shooting a three. Here's my response to that, and I think the analyst felt the same way. Who cares? I would rather them shoot a three with some contesting and stand and post our guy up in the block, knowing that the advantage is by far going to be to Wisconsin. I think it was Kaminsky was the player. Vonley, of course, much better defensive player in the post. Even when he makes a mistake, he has the long arm of the law to swat that baby out of there like a fly swatter, like a tennis racket, swatting a ball out in a drill that we used to do drills with tennis rackets when we were going to play bigger guys. But I think that's what they were saying. We don't think this is a good move. And, of course, it wasn't a good move. I don't know if Coach Green explained the move or not. It didn't matter in the end. We were able to hold on. But Bo Ryan's no dummy, and he immediately said, go down in the post and post that guy up, and they went down and scored. So I think the fans at Indiana, sometimes we get on fans and say, well, you know, they don't know. But the ones that are following the game, the ones that are involved, they understand sometimes the consequences of the substitution pattern. I'll be the first one to say, Tony, I scratched my head on it. But maybe he knew something I didn't know. Obviously, he's coaching the team. But it didn't look like a good move to me. And Bo Ryan did exactly what I was saying in the living room, go right at him, because the advantage was going to be Wisconsin. Folks, sometimes fans who follow the game, they see the perspective better than coaches and players may think they do, because we are so close to it, we maybe can't step outside the box and see what's really going on. And I applaud the fans for being into the game and understanding the consequences, the potential consequences of the move. I'm not sure I liked them booing, obviously, because it made Indiana fans look like they were getting on Coach Green. I really don't think they were getting on Coach Green as much as they were just saying, boy, we don't know about this move. We don't like this move in general.
Okay, next question comes from Carrie in Jasper. You played for Jasper basketball coach Rex May. What is Coach K's favorite Rex May quote?
I can't say it on the air. I could, because we're on the net and I can say it. But Coach May was a lot of fun. And he was tough. He was intense as an assistant coach, and he was intense as a head coach. And he was not beyond, if you weren't playing as a group the way you're supposed to play, he was not above, and you know, the political correct stuff, he was not above taking five guys off the floor at one time and walking them down to the dressing room in the middle of the game and dressing us up and down a little bit before bringing us back on. And I think that's how important Coach May looked at the game and the flow of the game. You know, people get too caught up in political correctness and, oh, he's yelling at him. Folks, this is athletics. This is sports. It doesn't fall under the same rules as going to – I mean, I go to the grocery store and see parents yelling at their kids. I mean, sometimes coaches need to raise their voice. Sometimes coaches need to get on their players. Sometimes coaches need to huddle them up close. And Coach May was great about doing what he believed needed to be done to wake his team up. But he had some classic sayings, folks. One of the things I can't talk about is he always used to bet you a Coke. He never paid you when you won, but he bet you a Coke on this team or that team or this shot or that. But he was intense. I enjoyed my time playing under Coach May, and we definitely, people that know me, we definitely didn't see eye to eye, and that was more my fault than his fault. But I would have played, I'd play for him again and would have ran into a wall for him. But he was very colorful, and you know, if you see me out, you want to sit down and have a Coke or drink a beer or something, I'll tell you a couple of his classic lines. But he was something. And I got to talk to him at the 100 Years of Jasper Basketball. I won a sectional with Coach May. I learned a lot of basketball from him, as well as obviously my dad and Coach Yarbrough, who's now passed away way too soon. But they were He was an outstanding coach for Jasper. Short time as a head coach, but a sectional championship, a couple of great teams, and he's looking good and doing well.
You know, you got to think about that bench when your dad was head coach. He had Rex May and Ed Yarbrough there to assist. And, wow, what a coach's dream to have a staff like that.
Well, he had true coaches who loved the game but also wanted to win, wanted this team to win. They didn't care if they were the assistant or the freshman coach. They took ownership in the basketball team, the way it played, the way it practiced. And when you have a coaching staff like that, it is so much fun to coach. I know I've had some assistant coaches that I felt were like that. They truly took ownership of the team. It mattered to them how our team played and our individuals played as much as it mattered to me. And they supported each other. You know, fans and parents, they're always trying to get you to say something about the head coach. Well, if you would be coach, you would do it like this. Or, you know, my kid says he likes working with you more than he likes working with the head coach. You know, they're always trying to get the assistant coaches to criticize the head coach. But, you know, the truth of the matter is this. There's nothing that goes on in practice and in a game that a staff that works together didn't plan out itself. There's nothing that goes on that they don't talk through, that one coach says, I'm going to get on so-and-so today because I think I can get to him a little. I mean, it's a team effort as a staff. As well as a team effort as players. And so, you know, when you have a good coaching staff, it shows at the end of the day. It shows in the record. It shows in the development of your players. And that doesn't mean you hang around and go everywhere together. But when you're together, you're in sync. And that makes a big difference, Joe. Hey, I got a text here. I just want to comment. I gave the number for Janet Schulteis, financial advisor with Edward Jones. It is 479-8215, area code 812. Give her and Beth a call. You'll be glad you did. Next thing.
That's the only thing we have. That's all we have for this week. But I'll tell you what, you know, I want to give Janet an endorsement. Janet is a lot smarter than Coach K. So, you know, always was one of the smartest kids in the 1981 class. At Holy Family, which was always our leader, you know. We never had a vote for class president, but Janet was probably the class president just because she was so sharp. So, you know, I endorse the going to Janet and making that money grow, right, Coach?
And obviously it's true because I'm working with you instead of with her. So that tells you how smart she is. I'm working with you.
I'd rather work
with her. Joe, let's talk about, well, that's what I'm saying. I should be, but I'm not smart enough. I'm working with you. Let's talk about this Facebook fiasco that started. You know, we made a post, and sometimes it's me posting, Joe posting. You never know who's going to post. But I posted that. I thought it was ridiculous to storm the floor, and it went on with several people giving responses. Let's kind of address that a little bit. We don't mind it. If you think that it was a dumb post, fine. Let us know. If you think that we're just being wannabe reporters, that's not what we are.
Skip Bayless.
We're a talk show. Skip Bayless. Does he do this? Does he do what we do?
I don't know
who he is.
We were called Skip Bayless wannabes. So you know, we're going to take ownership of that.
Because we were honest and we posted our thoughts on it. And you know what? For those who disagreed with us, why don't you go check out Facebook, ESPN, Twitter, whatever. There are a lot more people that you probably spend money listening to, watching, other than us, that agreed. And there were several people involved with IU that agreed as well. But again, to Chris and to Mark and to others out there, folks, give us your opinions and your thoughts. But that was just our opinion, that we just don't think it's necessary. But we do understand when you're in college, and my daughter is in college, and she was there, and she, I don't know if she said she went out on the court or not, but she thought it was awesome. I love that. I love that enthusiasm and excitement. I got no problem with that part of it. I just don't think from a psychology and tradition standpoint that that's the message we want to send to Wisconsin and their basketball program, although I think Bo Ryan is just one of the best coaches in the country. What else we got, Joe?
Well, we've got high school basketball. We've got some big games. We've got, Vincent's going to be taking on a 9-1 Sullivan team. We've got some good games coming up. You know, you asked earlier, I did check it out, and Bar Reeve is listed with one loss, but still is ranked number one in Class A. So, and, you know, I think Alan Williams, the other WRZR color analyst, he informed me that Sagarin or something, he looked at the way you compute it, that Lagodi is a 30-point underdog. Now, would you give 30 points in that game, Coach?
I'm not saying it can't happen. I don't know if Coach Hughes would push it to that level, but I wouldn't do a 30-point on that, because depending on if Lagodi can control the tempo, I think they can hold that game under 30 points. I think it'd be tough. I think it'd really be tough for that to be a 30-point loss. I think it could be. Don't get me wrong, but I think it would be tough. You know, Joe, also down in the Evansville area, the SIAC is having their city tournament right now, and they'll be playing that through the weekend. Castle has advanced. Harrison, who has played some pretty good teams and lost to them, have advanced. We need to get Coach Spears on and talk to him a little bit about the Harrison Warriors. They've advanced. Modern Day's advanced. They beat Memorial, which was kind of shocking. Wrights has advanced. The girls' tournament's going on as well. I think Modern Day, who you saw play, they have a pretty good girls' team, a couple of pretty nice girls. They've advanced. Central advanced in that as well. There's a lot of good basketball to go watch. I'm not saying there are a lot of great players and a lot of great teams in the southern part of the state right now, but there's a lot of good basketball to watch. And, of course, that was a nice win by Jasper over Vincennes Lincoln. I think it was an important win. I think it was a critical win for Coach Gable and the Cats at home. I think it was their first win in that new gym. It was against a pretty good Vincennes Lincoln team that they'll have to probably face in the tournament, which gives them at least the psychology that we can beat them after several lopsided losses to Vincennes in the past, especially in last year's sectional. Of course, Vincennes then comes right back and beats Bossy at Bossy the next night, so they rebounded mentally. But, Joe, I think you were at that Vincennes-Jasper game. Pretty good atmosphere, still a pretty decent rivalry. Even though it's dropped down a little bit, still a pretty decent rivalry.
You know, I don't think that the high school kids, even though Jasper has a student section called Team Tailgate, sometimes bigger than others, but you know, the place was packed, and the kids were crazy, and Coach Gable got a little miffed after a foul, which was great to see him show that excitement, because all that did was fire his team up, fired the fans up, and, you know, they lose a big lead. You know, they tie it up, and then they go ahead, and, you know, the kids didn't give up, and, you know, it was a freshman, Tyler Nottingham, you know, took that ball, drove to the hoop, shot a layup to tie it with seconds left, and then comes back and wins. And it was a great win, and it was also great to see that, you know, the tide had turned, but Jasper stayed strong and Jasper pulled up the victory. And I don't know how you feel about this, but the kids did storm the courts.
Well, I know, and again, on high school, it's not that critical to me, but I think Jasper needed that win. Coach Gable and his staff did a great job of preparing that team, and I'm sure Vincennes Lincoln came in on a cold night and didn't respect Jasper after some of the recent games, but when you go on somebody's home court in high school on the road, you got to be careful. You better you better be where you need to be mentally or you're going to have struggles. And of course, Vincennes could have tucked that win away at the free throw line, and they couldn't hit those shots. I was able to listen to the last part of the game, and Vincennes could have walked away with that victory after Jasper lost a sizable lead, but they didn't hit the free throws. And to Jasper's credit, they made their opportunities count, and they were able to get the win. It's a solid win for Jasper. They needed a win over a good team, and they got that. And it really put them in a position, I think, based on the Big 8, because I don't think the Big 8's very good this year, other than a couple teams. They're in a good position to win that conference. Of course, Harrison leads the SIAC conference. Jasper and Mount Vernon atop the Big 8. Heritage Hills atop the Pocket Athletic Conference with Tecumseh. South Spencer, Coach O'Brien was on. They have struggled since. I think they've dropped 5 of 6 games, Joe, and I'm sure he's played some good competition in that run. He'll be fine, I know. Blue Chip, South Knox on top of the Blue Chip with Bar Eve right there. And then other teams of note in the southern part of the state. Perry Central has a really solid year going. Of course, Indianapolis basketball, we hope to touch base with Don Schulteis or Kyle Neddenrip next week on that. Don and his wife are out in Napa Valley this weekend, Joe.
Oh, wow, drinking a little wine. A little wine and, taking it easy. Wow.
Either that or grape juice. We're probably ready to end the live of the show, are we not?
Yes, we are. We are on podcast.
Okay, well, Joe, if you're ready, I'm ready. You can take us home.
Okay, well, as always, I invite all of our listeners, you know, a great value, a great entertainment for your family is to go out and watch a high school basketball game, whether it be boys or girls. It's a great value. And I want to quickly note that we will be having Tyler Zeller on next week, Washington Hatchet, North Carolina Tar Heel, and Cleveland Cavalier Tyler Zeller on. And I invite you to listen to that. And for Coach K, this is Joe Milligan saying we'll see you next week on the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Ubelar & Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. See you next week.